thanks to the Society for giving us an hour and a half lunch, and thank you for being here before lunch, and Tom for organizing really a very nice session, a lot of interesting methods shown. If I look at the session title, I'm really emphasizing the model integration in this talk. I won't do much in new sensor technology, although I will mention something in future work. Rob Erskine, I just want to highlight one of my co-authors, is really largely responsible for running this field site that I'll show you at this time, as well as the modeling work we did together. So just by way of introduction and motivation, we were talking about state variables. So water content are typically measured or inferred at very small scales, and you know, most of our work, as we know, is at small scale by necessity, but we're interested in larger scales for management. And thus there's an implicit spatial disparity that we often ignore because we have to. The other thing we are doing here in our simulation is surface runoff, and that's typically measured only at the outlet, while in our models we may have distributed runoff. And even if water dynamics are only estimated at the whole watershed level, the spatial variability of the soil properties can affect the responses at larger scales. So these are kind of the premise for some of this work. So increased confidence is often sought by adding spatial complexity to watershed model parameters. A lot of you know the issues of non-uniqueness. So does increasing complexity improve the results or just make us feel better about our modeling effort? I hope to start to answer that question. So the answer may depend on a lot of things: the dominant biophysical processes of the watershed, the knowledge of different types of variability and what they are, and in particular, I hope to address the information content measured in these responses. So our approach is a balance of lumping and splitting, where spatial uniformity or lumping is kind of the preferred starting point. I always tell students, start much simpler than you're planning and work in the complexity, and we usually don't get to the level of complexity that we proposed. So that's what we'll be doing today. So this will be an example in Colorado, semi-arid climate, small watershed, which is within a wheat field. There's a series of measurements that have gone on since really 2001 in this field. I'll be talking just about soil moisture and runoff in this talk using our in-house agricultural ecosystem services watershed model. It's a mouthful, but we call it AGES. So just drilling down to our site, we go down to a continental scale, and you can see the Cache-Laputa watershed here. This is where I live, Fort Collins. Oh, that's our farm. This is Fort Collins, Colorado. And then if we zoom into the particular dryland field, you can see it has alternating strips. It was managed in alternating strips. Oh, I skipped a step, but we'll go past that. And we've measured topography in detail with survey-grade GPS, so we have 5-meter grid cells. And from that, we can delineate the red boundary is our watershed, and the green points in two transects are capacitance sensors at 4 depths each. So those are the basis of what we're trying to simulate today. You'll notice that we don't cover the watershed very uniformly. That's probably a pragmatic thing, but we do cover a range of the soils and the terrain in terms of slope. The other sensors that we have out there more recently that I'm not talking about today are a couple of energy balance towers that start to integrate things at larger scale, and cosmic ray probes. The one to the south we just put in last week, so I won't be showing you those data, but we will be looking at how you integrate over larger scales. And this is just a slide to show you some nice pictures. On the upper right is the cosmic ray sensor. As you go down from there, you see the capacitance sensors. We've got energy balance in the middle. We do have a portable TDR, which we use to are using with the cosmic ray probe, and various rain gauges around the site. Many of you are familiar with the capacitance-based sensor, the issues, and I won't go into those, but these are fully buried, and the main point is just that the surface conditions are not affected by the sensor itself, and they've been in the ground since 2001. We have pulled some of them out at times. We're measuring runoff at the end of the field. This is called a drop box weir that Jim Bonta designed. And just highlight that in our climate, although it's semi-arid, we do get some intense rainfall events, and we get these. I just like this photo, by the way, but it's indicative of what produces this kind of runoff. When we set up this flume, actually I won lunch from my technician who said, "Tim, it'll never run off." Well, we got runoff. In fact, it completely swamped our wing walls and we had to rebuild. But as you notice, the flume itself self-scoured and did quite well. So going from that measurement background to what we're modeling, we have this small watershed. On the lower diagram, you'll see potential flow paths or potential contributing areas. And I just wanted to show you, this is actually outside of the watershed boundary, but we have a probe where we have 10 depths of soil moisture. And just so you can see the kind of dynamics we're looking at, this is going back a ways to 2003. The top graph is showing you precipitation, actually daily amounts, but the red lines are more useful to see kind of the cumulative amount for each year. And then we have these two sensors, and I'll highlight the one at the bottom. So in the bottom, we had fallow conditions in 2003 and 2005, and what you see in the first year is we start very dry. We had a big snow followed by rain event. It was a March, less than a meter of snow in Fort Collins. We had a meter, and it wet up much of the soil profile, but only down to about a meter. So a very slow response because of the dryness. In 2005, we actually wet up the full profile, most of the profile. So those kind of dynamics, the question is, how much do we need to simulate spatially? And so I'll show you the results of a watershed model, AGES, which is a distributed model that can move water around the landscape in a more complex way than some. I won't go into detail here, but it has management in terms of tillage, plant harvesting, it's got the plant growth, and then we have our hydrology, which is in the right, and this is a summary of it, and it's a, I call it a response function model. We published this a little bit ago in Biozone Journal, and this is an example of what I'm plotting here is the large pore storage output from one layer to the next as a function of the amount available, so it's a fraction, and the amount of water, and there's one particular exponent calibration parameter in there which you can see can make a dramatic difference. So we can tweak that. It's a non-physical variable, but that's what we've calibrated. And I'll skip the next slide, which is about evaporation. Same idea. So we wanted to answer this question. We've got this transect of sensors. What if we divide the watershed into different size of hydrological response units? So the first case, the top one is just topography and land use. In the middle, we add some soil mapped units, so that kind of dissects some of those slopes. And in the last one, we manually made sure we had only one soil probe per HRU. So we'll be comparing either an average laterally of those sensors, but at each depth, we're comparing simulated at depth with measured at the four depths. And these are some simulation results of the calibrated model, just to show you that we're simulating spatial variability across this field watershed, where the management obviously is having an effect in the strips. And then if you look on the right side, you can start to see some hill slope effects. And on the lower right is just showing you some of the dynamics. You saw the measured ones. These are simulated. We also looked at, it's kind of a little bit of a crude, it's a daily model, and the infiltration runoff is a little bit crude for looking at sub-daily events like this, but we wanted to test how well it could do. So we simulated runoff with spatially variable saturated hydraulic conductivity at the surface. And this shows you how those vary depending on how we resolve the model. And the runoff, if you look at the lower right, so that's the one with 58 HRUs. I'll be referring to these as 27, 51, and 58. You can see that you start to get accumulation of flow down the slope. The run-on effect, we think, is important both for soil moisture and for runoff, even in the semi-arid landscape. So here's the main result of the calibration to try to answer that question about parameter complexity. So on the X or the Y axis, we have the deviation between simulated and observed. So this is our objective function that we're trying to minimize. So lower is better. And on the x-axis, we have spatial parameter complexity. I call that we have uniform parameters over the whole watershed, vertical variability only, horizontal variability only by HRU. Profile means that we actually have that vertical calibrated number, but then we multiply it by a constant for each HRU. So it's actually 3D, but it's not fully 3D. And the last one is fully 3D. And what we see is with the first of 27 HRU, which, if you remember, we only had four HRUs that actually had sensors in them, we saw almost no benefit of additional model parameter complexity in our calibration. But as we go up in our resolution of the model, and we have more HRUs that have sensors in them, essentially, we start to see that parameter complexity pays some dividends. Now I wanted to say, what if we upscale from each of these simulations? We just want to know the dynamics of water at each depth again, but averaged over the whole field. And these are the results, other than that last point, which I can't actually explain why it did that. They all upscale fairly similarly. So we're getting, you know, 0.03 volumetric water content error or difference between simulated and observed. And I just noted that Mike Cushman wrote a paper recently with that model error in it. I think that was in the Dato Stone Journal. So now we go, what if we actually want to go the other way and say, what if we go to those, not the other way, we're still upscaling, but we're going from the finer resolution to the coarser resolution model results. And for the simpler model calibration methods, we don't really see much advantage. As we go to more complex, we actually do. So the combination of complexity and model resolution does make a difference there. That's the point of that. And then this is the opposite. If we say, what if we take our lower resolution models and we try to predict what's happening at the finest resolution, which we're saying is kind of at the probe level, then we see that, in fact, there is a model error that is due to this downscaling. So there's a lot of work on downscaling of soil moisture, and this may relate a more physically based model to that kind of downscaling. So these are all the results together just to kind of show you the spread. So what do we conclude before lunch? The long-term measurements of spatial and temporal variability of system parameters and state variables are essential for this process understanding that we're trying to seek and the spatial estimation of these model parameters. The value of spatially explicit model and parameter complexity relates to the information content. And this is one example. We often don't have enough information to inform the model to do that kind of work. Coarser and finer ages model delineations provided similar upscaled results. So if we're really just looking for field average, we don't need to go to that level of complexity, probably. And then downscaling to the probe level required a higher level model resolution and improved with more parameter complexity. Maybe a little bit relevant to this group that we could talk about later if you like is the use of a cosmic ray sensor, and our plan is to, actually we have to simulate a new period here, but to look at scaling to that scale in terms of the model and our finer resolution with our TDR measurements. And then simulate infiltration and runoff at sub-daily time scales is in our plans for the model work, because I'm talking about spatial resolution, but temporal resolution has an effect also. And then just exploring complexity of other parameters that weren't studied here. So thank you. Yes.
So if you're looking at pesticides, let's say in a field, then you may have to use a very different complexity of a model to describe what's going on. And the other thing I just mentioned is, did you look at outflow complexity or just on the soil moisture?
I didn't show you the runoff results except for those plots. And yes, it does improve the simulation of runoff. But again, because of the model only being a daily model, it's somewhat limited. So I didn't want to go too into what this model could do in that. I think when we do subdaily, then be able to do a little better on that. But good point about the processes underlying also affect it, right? Is that your point? Yeah. Tell me. I'm not sure. What is the bias? Is it what you're asking? Essentially, we minimize bias by minimizing the root mean squared error. So there's not a large bias, if that's what you mean. But that's through calibration. So if you were uncalibrated, there would be a much larger bias. I'm not sure if that answered your question. Lunch, anyone?